This is the Social Link Podcast, episode 23.
The Michael Bay of Final Fantasy.
On the whole moment till now, break away. Oh God, let me out. Can you let me out? Can you set me free from being stuck in the world? Save me the last bit in the
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Social Link Podcast. This is Alex.
This is Anthony.
How's it going?
Just doing some editing, getting my second episode of my other podcast ready. What about you?
I just played a little bit of Final Fantasy XIV, which I have a feeling we're going to be talking a lot about today.
Ooh, I have something interesting that I really want to talk about. An old topic, but a new emphasis on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I remember. Okay, I'm intrigued.
Okay, so let me explain. It's part of what I'm playing, but I'll give you a hint. Let's go back to 2012, Game of Horizon podcast, okay?
Okay.
Recall that we talked a lot about iPhone games.
Yes.
Which, they're not, you know, there's a misconception about those. I will be talking about one of the best iPhone games I have played in a long time today.
Was it something I suggested?
No.
I'm a little bit disappointed by that.
No. But it is something interesting, though.
Okay.
I'll talk about it.
Okay.
I'll talk about it, along with a little bit of Tales of the Abyss and all that. But I mostly want to talk about the iPhone game this week.
Oh, wow. Okay. So why tease it? Why don't we just go into it right now?
Okay. So a couple years back, there's an iPhone game that was released. I'm going to get on my iPhone to look it up, look up the developer, because it always escapes me. But you heard of a game called Mage Gauntlet, correct?
I've heard of it, but nothing really else about it.
Okay, it's a very story-driven Diablo rogue-esque type game.
Okay.
Okay, and I liked it a lot. It's a really, really, really good game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am also logging into the App Store because I gotta give these guys credits where credits deserved.
Okay.
I think Mage Gauntlet was released 2011.
Oh, wow.
And then its final patch was probably, I think, September of 2012.
Okay.
Okay, now I found the developers. It's called Rocket Cat Games.
Never heard of them.
Okay, so they made this game. It's a really well-received game. It's actually, it's a very, very cool game. It's very story-driven, which is unusual for roguelike games.
Okay.
Well, they made their follow-up, which was released back in April.
Okay.
And it is called Wayward Sword.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing about Wayward Sword. They're doing something interesting with in-app purchases.
Mm-hmm.
Pay-to-play. Okay, this is what they're doing. If you buy the game when it was released, the game was $4.99.
Mm-hmm.
After the last patch, which is a huge patch that adds basically expansion worth of content, it mm-hmm. went up a dollar.
Right.
Rocket Cat Studios have gone on record saying they're going to release several of these. So any time that there's a big patch, it goes up in price. However, if you buy it like I did after the second patch at $5.99, I get the following patches for free. It's only for those that...
Ah.
Yeah. Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to buy it, just saying if you were to buy it now, or say you were to buy it back in April, you would have gotten it for $4.99 and all the patches would have been free. You don't have to pay for the patches thereafter.
Got it. Well, that's an interesting business model.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think it's kind of fair, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, this way it rewards early adopters and stuff, and, it doesn't shaft, like them. Because usually, typically what happens in the mobile space is that when people buy, mobile games, it goes to free to play, shortly afterwards if it doesn't sell a lot. And, of course, those guys get shafted. Not all the time, but typically, companies who are just, who just want to get more money and stuff, just kind of like, hey, returning this to free to play, I mean, I know we said it was going to be, you know, a paid game, but we'll give you credit for it, which is kind of dumb, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, this is interesting.
It's a very interesting model. And the latest, what this game is it's also a roguelike game. And what's cool about it is it starts off with this prologue, right?
Right.
And you're a paladin and all your guys have been slaughtered. And basically what's cool about it is you go in and you go in the tower and you confront the guy that killed all your men.
Mm-hmm.
And then he puts you in like a Halo Reach end of game situation where you're in a situation where you just fight till you die.
That's weird.
Okay. And then you die and then you select your characters. Now, all the characters are kind of atypical, you know, fighter, mage, thief, right? The three main biggies of the roguelike or even fantasy genre, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you choose one of those characters, and then there are three other characters. Spell sword, which is they cast enchantments on their spells.
Mm-hmm.
There's cultist, and I forgot the other one. And you unlock those characters as you beat the dungeons, right?
Right.
Now, here's the interesting part about the game that shocked me. These three characters are more than archetypes. There's actually deep backstories to these characters.
I see.
So that's what caught my attention right away. Because what was interesting about it was Mage Gauntlet was very story-driven.
Mm-hmm.
But you only played as one character, the female character.
Right.
In this one, and they all have their own different stories and own different cutscenes and all this different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even the dungeon that they develop, it's not like a Diablo dungeon. As much as like Diablo, you know, it's a mine. So you find out like what corrupted the miners to attack you, that type of thing. So there's a lore and there's a backstory.
Mm-hmm.
So as you beat each floor of the first dungeon, pieces of the backstory is revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you beat it, for the example, the fighter, his backstory is basically him and his brother were two very strong mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
His brother got killed. Now it's like, oh, it's going to be revenge. But there's a twist on it that's pretty neat. His body gets stolen.
Okay.
And then you find out that there's a necromancer that stole it.
Mm-hmm.
And that you tracked him down to these mines and to that tower that the paladin went at the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you get to the final floor of the first stage, you encounter the necromancer, and then there's this whole sequence where he sort of taunts you and flees and gets away. Now, as far as the story developing beyond that point, I don't know, but it seems very story based.
Okay,
and then the same with like the thief. The thief, you know, she goes to the tower. She was hired by a marquis. And then she finds out, which hints at like an old lover or boyfriend or whatever,
mm-hmm.
That screwed her over, is a rival for the same treasure. So they're not just archetypes, okay. Which is cool. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story based up. It's all pretty cool.
And it's a roguelike?
It's roguelike.
Hmm.
It's roguelike because when you die, there's no spawn points, nothing like that. You start at the beginning like any classic roguelike game does.
Got it.
Okay. But it's also Diablo-esque because all the dungeons are randomized.
You know, this reminds me of a game that I'm actually looking forward to. It sounds suspiciously like it.
Okay.
But I'll tell you later.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, They're all randomized, that type of thing. The other thing, too, and here's what's interesting about the game, too, is that in Diablo, it's mostly the layout that's different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even Persona 3, as much as I love those, most randomized dungeons, it's the layout. What's interesting is sometimes they give the mines a different look to it. A lot of the time, there are different enemies.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed of the same level, of course.
Right.
So basically, like, you know, one, you know, you might, the first one's always usually the same miners and stuff, but you might fight robotics in one level.
Sure.
The second level, or it might be more miners, or it might be orcs, or it might be lizard people.
Okay.
And then it switches everything out, which it makes it each a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
This is the part, the next thing I'm going to talk about is the thing that kind of turns off people a little bit, that or gets them skeptical about it. You don't level up in this game.
Interesting.
You don't level up, but what happens is you accumulate gold, and even when you die, you have the option going back to the character select screen. Of course, you can choose a new character, but you use your gold to build up more stronger abilities and things like that. So that's how you advance your character. So, for example, one of the mechanics in the game is every time you go to a new floor, other than advancing the story, part of your life that you lost is restored. So you can have a skill that you invest money into that increases the amount of life that increases from floor to floor to floor. Or things like that, or increased speed or stuff like that. There's also a customizable thing called hats, which you could put on your characters. And the other thing, too, I have to talk about is the controls.
Okay.
These are amongst the best iPhone controls I have played with.
No joke.
I mean, I have not had issues with it. Couple things interesting about the controls. There is no virtual joypad.
Okay.
What it is the left side and the right side are divided up, of course. Your thumb can move anywhere on that left side, and it moves the character in the direction you slide it. And what's cool is it's not obtrusive to blocking your character, even on an iPhone 5C. And then here's the best part. Here's the part that I really enjoy. The way they have hotkeys set up, or what assumed to be hotkeys. So, for example, the warrior, he could throw axes, right? You slide it right to throw axes, or you slide it down to use the shield.
Okay.
The same with the mage. She has different spells. You slide your thumb in a different direction, and then tapping on it is their basic attack.
Okay.
So very, very, very good. Good.
Okay.
So that's what I like about the game. I have heard, though, that the difficulty spikes in the third dungeon. It is a difficult game already, I think. But the difficulty spikes, and that's a common complaint. The other things, and I have to agree with people on this, healing potions, when you do get them, they're too rare, and they're way too rare. I think the whole time I played the game, as many times as I died, I've only gotten 3 healing potions. And they kind of suck. So that's it. So we're going to see it. I'm going to progress further. I'm more interested in the difficulty spike. But the studio has addressed those issues in this large patch. They have made the dungeons. They already tried to make the dungeons in the third level smaller from the original release. And then, and that's about it. But people are still not happy about it. So I think the next patch, they're gonna have to lower it.
Okay.
Especially if they're going to keep supporting this game.
Hmm.
So, I mean, you know, and then if you look at the patch update, too, this is the last thing. They added a whole new dungeon.
That's par for course, though, for, like, phone games.
Well, but the cool thing is you buy the game, you don't have to buy it.
No, that's what I mean. It's like, there are iPhone games these days that have free updates.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is kind of common for iPhone games in general. Like, I remember there's a lot of iPhone games that started off with just what they had, and then they just started, like, updating it for free. If it's a paid app, you know, for being a paid app. So, so this is not surprising. But, you know, that being said, the pricing model seems really interesting. You know, having to force people later on to actually pay a lot more for the game, I think that is fair. But yeah, I'm glad you're kind of excited for an iPhone game. That's pretty cool.
It's really a good game. It really is. I recommend it. It's got an 8-bit look, you know, typical of,
well, yeah.
Yeah. But it's and the music. That music is very somber, and it's kind of sad, and the whole game has kind of a sad atmosphere to it. Which is it's cool. And that intro is really, really good. That's a really good intro. It feels like, to me, it feels like a true handheld game as opposed to a mobile game. What, you know, that definition is. So all in all, I'll be honest, this is a great iPhone game. It is worth $5.99. And of course, if you buy it now, you're going to get it at the cheapest price you can at this point. It's going to go up.
Mm-hmm. When they have like a big update again.
Yeah, when they have a big update. They've had two updates. They had the original update, and then it looked like a minor fixes update. Mm-hmm. And then they had one that just had tons of content.
Right.
So, and it tells an interesting story. That's what I like about it. That's what surprised me, because roguelike games are very thin in story.
Mm-hmm.
Usually.
Right.
So, especially something on mobile apps.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, for iPhone, it is up there with probably Chaos Rings and Saturday Morning RPG as the best original iPhone game.
Mm-hmm.
Or mobile games.
Right.
So, I don't know if this is available on the Android. I have no clue. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, nothing like that. But it is on iTunes. Mage Gauntlet is just as good, too. It's very cheap as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that game, you know, that game is very good. So, I recommend both of those.
Okay.
Especially if you're looking for a good RPG, roguelike, that type of thing.
How did you stumble upon this?
I was in the iTunes store. Okay. And I was and I saw it for $5.99, and I brushed it off because I was like, because it had the plus on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, buy the best shit.
Yeah.
You know, that assumption.
Sure.
And then I was like, there's something that caught my eye about it. I'm like, oh, fuck it. I went and read it. And I'm like, that sounds cool, you know? And then I read how the patch system works,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the, you know, more expensive that we've already went through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, and I read a couple reviews on it. Yeah. And even though, you know, I know about the difficulty spike, I still went ahead and got it.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. There are flaws in it, though. Like, I think potions need to be a little bit more frequent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But come on. I've died numerous times in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I have died a lot, Alex. And there's no reason why I should only have a healing potion 3 times.
Well, it is a roguelike.
Yeah, it's very roguelike.
I mean, to its credit, it is. It wasn't lying.
Yeah, it's roguelike. Yeah, let's be fair there. But, you know, it is what it is. And then And there's one other thing I forgot to tell you. You can advance your character another way. And this is where it gets really roguelike. You find forges.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where your like attacks and things like that increase. So sometimes it'll give you an option to increase your gauntlets or your armor or your sword or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually 2 or 3 in each level. You find those and that increases it. But, you know, you die. It's roguelike. So guess what happens?
Mm-hmm.
You lose it all.
Yep.
So, but good game though. If you're into that type of stuff, I think this is a different kind of a good meshing mm-hmm. of Diablo and roguelike. Because I don't consider Diablo roguelike by any means.
No, not at all.
Not at all. But this is a perfect meshing of the roguelike and the Diablo formulas.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
It's a good game.
All right. I'm convinced. I'm just not sure if I'm going to buy it, because I'm also looking forward to another roguelike, actually, this month. And that's going to be... those are words that's not going to be... You're not going to hear too often coming out of my mouth. Actually looking forward to a roguelike.
Okay, so tell me... You are going to talk about this later. It's later. Let's talk about it.
It is later. I am talking about a game that was just announced yesterday. I mean, this game has been around for at least a little bit over a year. These are from the developers of Don't Shit Your Pants, the adventure game where you try not to shit your pants as you go on the way to the bathroom. Ted reviewed it on Gamer Horizon if you want to check it out. It is called Rogue Legacy.
Huh, Rogue Legacy, fitting name.
Yes. So this is, as they call it, a genealogical roguelite game. It's already out for PC, Mac, and Linux for $15. It's DRM free if you buy it from their website. It is now coming to PlayStation 3, Vita, and PlayStation 4 on the 29th of this month.
You got me interested.
So this is cross-buy and cross-save. Which
Yay!
Is very, yeah, I know, right? Not a lot of those, like, hanging around these days.
Oh, fuck, we got a lot of those back in 2012.
Well, yeah, or 2007.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it would like flow. I mean,
oh shit.
Yeah, remember that. Anyway, so Rogue Legacy is an interesting blend of Infinity Blade mixed with Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Wait, what?
Yes. You heard me. You probably have never heard of this game. I've been waiting for this game for a long ass fucking time.
Is it 2D scroller?
Yes, it is.
Okay, tell me more about it.
Okay, and it also has a procedurally generated castle. So it's different every single time.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Wow. There's over 8 classes that you can choose from, and each of the classes have unique abilities. And that, you know, that alters the way that you play the game. Which is great. It also has a massive skill tree, lots of loot. Like, this is one of those games where if you love loot, you're going to love it. I'm basically, like, reading the feature list that they have on their site. They have a new game plus. There's a way to customize your character with runes and all that stuff. There's a lot of fart jokes because, you know, it's from the guys who made Don't Shit Your Pants and clowns. The hook of this game, other than it being a roguelite, which means you basically lose everything in the game, like all your items and whatnot and all that stuff, is where the Infinity Blade aspect of the game comes out. And what that means is, if you die, one of your sons or children actually come out to avenge you. However, each child is genetically deficient. And this is where the hook is of this game, which
is... Wait, what?
Yes. Your character can be... Yeah, they could be... they could be genetically deficient. So let me give you an example. If your character... If the offspring has the trait called ADHD, they will move 30% faster.
Okay. Oh, shit.
If the offspring has Alzheimer's, your character or this offspring will not have access to the map at all, but the mini map will still be present. But you can look at the map when you're accessing waypoints, but there's no information or little navigation is actually given to you.
What the fuck kind of game is this?
And then there's like some really cool ones. Like, for example, if your offspring is colorblind, everything in the game is going to be grayscale. There are really funny things like you could be farsighted, you could be nearsighted, you could be gay, you could have hypergonadism. There's like a whole list on their Wikia, like somewhere else. It's really, really fucking awesome and funny just from the sound of it.
What? You got me. Wow.
So you have to pardon me for not being excited about the game you just described, because this game, regardless of the fact that it doesn't have a story, seems pretty fucking interesting, and every single time you play the game, it seems like it's going to be different. Now, here's the thing that's interesting, too, about this game. So when you boot up the game, it generates the castle randomly, okay? Every single time. When you die, it's still the same castle. But when you turn off the game and turn it back on, it'll generate a brand new castle. But in order to avoid another procedurally generated castle, you can actually pay a huge amount of money to prevent it from randomly generating the next time you log into the game. So
gotcha.
There's a lot of kind of systems at play here, and this is a game that relies solely on its systems. And if you look carefully, like the whole roguelite aspect of it, to the random generation of the dungeons, to the massive skill tree that it has, lots of loot, and all the different classes, this is pretty much a game that thrives on systems. And it's a good example of a game that uses random number generation in order to create some really interesting scenarios.
Well, maybe. I don't know. It sounds cool.
This is a pretty damn good game. I mean, there's a trailer for it on here and stuff, and it's like, it does feel like a Castlevania game, for all intents and purposes, except that this is a Castlevania game where you can lose everything.
Wow.
Yeah. And, of course, the traits are actually really comical. Like I just said, there's a ton of traits that your character can have. And, you know, I think this is... I don't want to say this is the next step for Infinity Blade, but I feel like this kind of makes fun of that whole notion of genealogy, like, and taking it a little bit to a much more meaningful extent, I feel.
Unlike Infinity Blade, where you're exactly the same.
You're pretty much exactly the same, wearing the same armor for some reason, even though, like, it makes you wonder, like, wait, how did they take that armor from in there? It doesn't make sense. It's, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, that always cracked me up. Infinity Blade.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of which, that I have to play the third one a bit more.
I haven't even popped it in.
Yeah. I bought it.
Yeah.
But I haven't played it.
No, I bought it too, but like I don't know. I guess I'm just burnt out on the series. If it's going to be the same kind of formula, you know, like it's like, I guess when I played Infinity Blade 2, I felt like the series couldn't get any better than that. You know, because they got it right. Good. What's that?
Infinity Blade 2 was really good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you had the character progression with leveling and the armor and all that stuff. And you know, and the fights are great. They're more epic than ever. So it's like, okay, so how do you make a game better and make a part 3 out of it? You know, especially in the short amount of time these games are usually developed, you know?
There was Dungeons.
Yeah.
But that got canceled.
Yeah. Which was really sad because that company really deserved, you know, like, to get a crack at that, you know, sort of gameplay. I was really sad when I heard that. But, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? So, I felt like Rogue Legacy when I first saw it last year. I mean, you know, I actually met the developers at IndieCade last year in in Culver City. And they had, like, a really positive kind of attitude towards their game. And I feel like a lot of developers need to kind of learn from them. You know, and just kind of have their demeanor. It is a game that does not take itself seriously, which makes it awesome. And, you know, it lends itself to the randomly generated, you know, like, situations in the game. So, and there is an end. You know, there is an end. That's why there's a new game plus. So, I'm definitely looking forward to that at the end of the month. So, yeah, Rogue Legacy for basically, like, everything except the Xbox platforms at this point.
Oh, wow.
And Nintendo, of course.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, it seems like, well, roguelike games are an interesting bunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember in TPPG, there was this, what the fuck was it called? It was a very obscure Japanese one. And it was this, like, little ninja guy.
What? It's not Mystical Ninja, is it?
No. Not Mystical Ninja's great, but that's not a roguelike game. That's more of like a... I don't know what you would call Mystical Ninja.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, but there... I don't know. Something Traveler?
I don't remember what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know we talked about in TPPG.
Or well, it's no use like trying to remember it while we're actually recording a podcast, Anthony, because people are expecting us to say something.
Well, no, that's the thing, because there's a lot of, you know, roguelike games have been kind of consistent for a long time. They're not mainstream, but they're, you know, there have always been consistency in that kind of genre.
You mean consistent release, like they're always, you know, they always keep popping out from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like I think Etrian Odyssey is a roguelike game.
No, that's more like a dungeon crawler, dude.
Okay.
Like a 3D dungeon crawler. That's pretty much like all the Etrian Odyssey games.
Okay. I know the Pokemon dungeon games are roguelike.
I don't know.
Yeah, but they've always had consistent releases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to see that genre is a little... It can be frustrating.
I really have no opinion of roguelikes. I mean, roguelikes are great for people like you, but I have no patience for them, which is why I'm kind of surprised that I am pretty enthused with the news that Rogue Legacy is finally coming out, because, you know, it's a game that, you know, it's a game set in a genre that I completely kind of, you know, haven't played in a long time. I think the last one that I really truly played was last year's Mirror of Fate, and that was only okay. And you know, and I was kind of like thinking and hoping to be able to play something a little bit more substantial. So if Rogue Legacy has all that stuff kind of really taken care of and all the systems are kind of working the way that I'd like it to be, then yes, I will definitely, you know, rant and rave about it once it comes out. But you know, the problem with the Rogue Legacy coming out on the 29th is it's also coming out with another alongside another big hitter, which is The Last of Us Remastered Edition.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, ugh, really? Come on, you know, and I do plan on replaying that because, of course, Anthony is going to play through Last of Us, which I have to warn you, we are almost to the 29th, and you still have not beat Bioshock Infinite.
Well, maybe I could beat it after that, so.
Jeez, this is how games don't get finished, folks. Yeah, because you leave shit, and then you're like, you come back to it, you're like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do in this game.
Well, here, I'm going to start Bioshock over. And then,
oh, Jesus. Okay.
I wasn't that far into it. I was like an hour, so I'll restart it. And then here's the other thing. Luckily, Last of Us, I never fucking played it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay on that game.
Well, yeah.
I'm just going to play through the main game. I'm not going to play through any DLC, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I heard the main game is just as good as itself.
Yeah, and the main game is, you know, like, we have the review of the main game and the DLC on our site. But, yeah, I think the strongest piece of The Last of Us is its main storyline. But, you know, it's neither here nor there. We're going to be playing that at the end of the month. I'm going to be playing it again at the end of the month. And I'm definitely going to stream that on my, you know, Twitch channel. Which, much to the surprise of the people who are probably expecting me to stream, like, Final Fantasy XIV forever, it's going to change at the end of the month. And I might even stream Rogue Legacy, because I really do dig that game, and I hope, like, you know, a lot of people do check out my stream when I stream those games.
Speaking of streams, I'm hoping to stream Baldur's Gate 2 here in the near future.
Really?
Yeah.
You figured out OBS yet?
Not yet, but I'm hoping to do it soon, so.
Okay, that's good.
So at least I have something to stream, you know? One of my favorite games. You know, Yeah, so that way, I wish the Wii U would have it. I would love to stream a bunch of virtual console games.
Yeah.
Or, you know, PlayStation 3.
Yeah, but, you know, there's... That's a whole bunch of other contracts, you know what I mean? Like, I think that the reason why the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One get away with it, because it's part of the clause, you know, of assigning, of creating a game on, you know, on their system saying, look, we're gonna allow people to stream their games. And I think that, you know, like, by making a game on our platform, you do realize that it's gonna be streamed at some point. You know what I mean? For better or for worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know, like, I really think that streaming is pretty awesome. I mean, I've had a lot of fun, like, doing it. It's just, this week has been kind of weird because patch 2.3 came out, and I've been doing a lot of stories, so people have been avoiding my stream, because I basically say, hey, by the way, story spoilers, and so people are not, like, showing up, because they're like, nope, we don't want to check out the story, I'm sorry. So,
I wonder how people are going to take a Baldur's Gate 2 stream.
I think they'll like it.
Because I don't think that's a game that's streamed often.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
And you know what's great about it, too, mm-hmm. is that's a game that's very customizable, experience per experience per experience. Mm-hmm. Main story stays the same, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize about old BioWare games. The old BioWare games have a complexity that newer ones lack.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being honest here, okay? So what was interesting about Baldur's Gate 2 is there are quests and story sequences, entire story sequences, dependent on your race and your class and even your gender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So when I first played through it, I played through an elven female fighter
mm-hmm.
who remained single the whole time. And what's interesting about that is because I chose that combo, there was no romantic situations for that character.
Mm-hmm.
So thus my experience was different. And then I always talk about the when I became a lady of the keep mm-hmm. and where I had to judge a guy and I could have executed him for stealing instead of listening to his story.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's, you know, and then there's a wizard's keep thing and thieves. And that's what's cool about it. So when people watch my stream of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on what I choose, you know, it's going to be one of those things where cool, you know?
Right.
Your experience is going to be different from whoever else is streaming it.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm kind of interested to see how that's going to work.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. I mean, I think it'll be fine. I, you know, the one thing that I do encourage people, you know, is just to start streaming. there's no harm in just starting, you know? And I think that once you get going and people realize like what you're streaming and what value it is to people, and, you know, just the fact that they like it and stuff, and if you're a very personable individual and you talk to your audience, I think it'll be great. But, you know, for me, sometimes it's very difficult and I have to address them sometimes because I'm sometimes playing like a really serious section. And a lot of the time in my stream, I'm reading a lot of text because of the storyline. So it's like, understandably, like it's not the most exciting, it's not the most exciting thing to watch. And, you know, and I'm kind of been thinking about like, well, okay, so when should I stream and all that stuff? Because, you know, there's a reason why people don't like reading, right? And watching, and they'd much rather watch things. So, but yeah, that being said, I'm definitely looking forward to streaming more games. I mean, I hope there's more people, but I think, I honestly think though that the busiest time for streaming is the weekend.
Mm.
You know, and because I'm probably going to stream for close to 8 hours again tomorrow, just because I think that that's kind of fun to do anyway. And, you know, because I think everybody wants to be able to just kind of sit down, maybe have dinner or something like that, and then watch somebody stream. So I think I'm going to do that tomorrow. I'm going to try to do it. And of course, tomorrow is not tomorrow when this podcast releases. It's actually yesterday, since these are getting released at like midnight on Saturdays these days. So, anyways, let's move on to the like non-boring shit. Like, you know,
and streaming's not boring.
No. I mean, yeah. If Nintendo is to be believed, it's not fun.
It's not fun.
Yeah, streaming is not fun, guys.
Although what's ironic is I ran into a guy that streamed a very cool Zelda Wind Waker 3 heart run.
Yeah. Oh, wow. The whole thing, huh?
Yeah, he's still running it, too.
Jesus.
That's difficult. Have you tried a 3 heart run on a Zelda game? Those are bitches. Uh-uh.
No.
Yeah, there's some people, too, that don't even go after the extra armor.
Wow.
Or, you know, the extra tunics that protect you. So.
Jeez. Yeah, there's some hardcore runners, like, on Twitch. And a lot of Twitch thrives on that. But I feel like, you know, there's so much content on Twitch that, you know, it's like, it's pretty awesome. It's almost like live TV. It's the live TV to the reviews and Let's Plays that you can find on YouTube. You know what I mean?
League of Legends.
Well,
it's huge.
Well, yeah, that goes without saying.
Well, real quick, here's the thing that I think a Twitch TV has over a, say, a Let's Play. A Let's Play, you fuck up, mm-hmm. You can edit that shit out, make you look better than you really are.
Yeah.
You know, you do a Mega Man 2 run, they're going to see everything you do. You're going to lose. You do a Ninja Gaiden run, you're going to lose. You're not going to make yourself look better. I think that's what some of the speedrunners on YouTube do. I think there's editing work done to those videos.
Oh, you think they're not legit?
Some of them. You can tell some of them aren't, but you can tell cuts when someone looks like they're about to die and then they squeeze out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really a cut. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And especially on some of the really difficult games like Ninja Gaiden and stuff like that. So I think Twitch allows you to get away with that. No, not what get away with that. Not get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you fuck up, you fuck up. You see the gaming in its rawest form.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's Twitch.
Yeah, I think it's fun. It really is.
I liked watching Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah, so you said we're going to actually talk about that a lot today. And I'm not hearing any sort of talk about that today. What is going on?
Talk about Final Fantasy 14?
Yeah, because you said on the stream, we're going to be talking about that game a lot. And I'm like, really?
Oh, no, I meant a lot in the future.
Oh.
I should have specified that. Yeah, because I'm going to get it soon, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. But, I mean, you know, you're going to be talking about it and stuff like that. And, again, I'm going to go on record and say I'm surprised because you're not tired of it yet. You beat Guild Wars.
Yeah, well, the thing is with Guild Wars is they add shit that's not interesting. Like, they would basically, like, I think if I remember correctly, the stuff that they add is kind of like, it is an addition to the storyline, but I'm not interested in the storyline. And they're very, the features are not as comprehensive, I guess. Because, like, you know, it's almost as if it's targeted towards a specific group of people. you know. And in an MMO specifically, there are different kinds of people, right? There's people who play for the story. There's people who play for the end game, which is the raids. There's the people who play for the PvP, and there's people who play for the crafting. So you get what I'm saying. It's like there's different activities for people to do. But in Guild Wars, it's, you know, too, it's a lot of stuff for the end game people, and then a few fixes for the people that haven't gotten to the end. And I feel that that's always been wrong, like with MMOs, is that you're basically like buffering and shoving everything, all the cool shit about the game, towards the end, which leaves a lot of the people in between like nothing else to do. You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. And so, Final Fantasy kind of fixed that.
I don't necessarily think they've fixed it, per se. But there is definitely a lot of stuff that you can encounter from the beginning of the game until you get to level 50. I mean, so much more, you know. And once you get to level 50 and you finish the main storyline, the floodgates open for the rest of the content. And that's even overwhelming. Like, I've seen threads where people actually talk about how they've gotten to level 50, they finished the main story, and then so much more shit, you know, like, opens up for them, and they don't know what to do. You know? Like, the game basically just opened it up and said, alright, here you go, do whatever the hell you want, and then they're like, now what? Because the game kind of handholds you all the way to the end, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know, it's almost like seeing your kid into to college. You're sending your kid to college, and you're like, and they're just kind of like, they're elated by the freedom, but at the same time, they're like, what am I going to do now?
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, that being said, I am working on the storyline for 2.3, and I've experienced just a few pieces of the new content, mainly because I'm still kind of doing like some of my quote unquote chores in the game, which is I need to raise my reputation with a specific beast tribe and all that stuff. And you only get like, you know, one crack at it every single day. But I did experience two pieces of content that are new to 2.3.
Okay.
Which is they added the ability to fire weapons with your Magitek armor when you're riding around.
Yes.
Yeah. You wouldn't guess though who actually gives you the quest.
Who?
I don't know. I'm like trying to think if I should spoil this. It is kind of a surprise, but not a lot of people has noticed this reference. There's only a few people, like maybe in an entire thread of about 40 pages, only maybe this was mentioned twice. And even Ted, when I mentioned to Ted about it and Ari, like they didn't even know who the fuck I was talking about.
Okay, how about we do this? I want to know. I don't care if I'm spoiled. Message it to me.
No, I was just going to say it on the show because I don't think people do know who the fuck I'm talking about. And once I do kind of describe who this person is, people are going to be like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Because in the original Final Fantasy that this person showed up, she was very integral to, you know, to the plight of the main character and everybody around them. I'm talking about Jesse from Avalanche.
Ah.
From Final Fantasy VII.
That makes sense because she's a techie.
Yeah, she's a redhead in this game, and basically like almost wears the exact same armor and, you know, and pants that she was wearing in Final Fantasy VII.
That leather outfit.
No, it's not leather outfit. It was just kind of like this metallic kind of armor looking thing, and then she has her red hair and then kind of like, kind of loose pants or something like that. I don't think she was wearing leather.
Wasn't she in love with Cloud? It hinted at that?
Yes.
She was attracted. Oh, goddamn, Cloud. A lot of people forget that's always Aerith or fucking Tifa.
Yeah, Jesse had a little bit of a crush on Cloud. And then something happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that's not a spoiler. That game's well over 10 years old.
It is. Yeah, if you haven't played Final Fantasy VII, shame on you. And the moratorium on that is gone. So, something bad happens to Jesse and the rest of the Avalanche team. So, there you go.
Except for Barrett.
So Jesse gave me the task, and I was like, whoa, that's Jesse. And she even has the same name, of course. And I'm like, and I was like, why does Jesse? Oh, and I was like tripping out. I was like, no way, it's Jesse. You know, I was like, And of course, like, everybody, you know, in the chat, in the Game of Horizon chat, is like, who? You're crazy. And I'm like, no, you're crazy for actually not knowing your Final Fantasy. That's like, fuck, a shame. Yeah.
Fuck, I knew that. Like, yeah. Quick. I'm like, goddamn. And you know what's cool, too, is you showed me today that 2.4 is going to have Ultros.
Yep. In of course, in a Colosseum storyline.
Which, you know, he is... Well, that kind of makes sense because that's his final fate in Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
He ends up... It's something stupid. He ends up working at the Colosseum, paying off his debt or something.
Yeah, and it seems like from the trailer, that's kind of like what he's doing too, because he was like in one part of the trailer, which is part of the Hildebrand quest, which the Hildebrand quests unlock in level 50, and they're very goofy quests. Like, it's its own. Okay, you know how in Skyrim there are multiple storylines?
Yeah.
When you get to level 50, there are more storylines open up. Okay, so there's a storyline that actually extends the main story of A Realm Reborn, which is always added every patch. Okay, there's the class storyline, which ends at level 50 once you get your the last of your artifact armor. I'm sorry. Then there's then there's all the other quests and stuff, all the other classes. I'm sorry, and then the floodgates open, and there's now different storylines for hard modes of dungeons, which actually tie into the original storylines of A Realm Reborn, and also part of the class quests, and also some of the quests that you've actually played throughout your entire journey through the game. Now, and also a separate storyline for the Crystal Tower, which is actually almost 100% based off of Final Fantasy III.
Oh.
All the way to Emperor Zand, who is the main bad guy of Final Fantasy III, being the ultimate bad guy of Circus Tower, which was added in 2.3.
I thought the Emperor was the main villain of Final Fantasy II, because the main villain of Final Fantasy III, NES one that is the Cloud of Darkness.
Well, I think that's one of his forms.
Cloud of Darkness is a female.
I have to check that.
Yeah, yeah, because I beat in Final Fantasy 3 on the DS, of course, the DS Oya iPhone release, you know what I'm saying.
Right.
And it's the Cloud of Darkness. And in fact, she's representative in Final Fantasy, those fighting games on the PSP.
I don't know. Oh, Dissidia? No, Zand is actually, like, I mean, I'm looking at a wiki here, and it says Zand is the main antagonist of Final Fantasy III. Yeah. So the Cloud is probably a form of him, but he is not considered as the main antagonist.
I don't remember. Well, who knows?
Yeah.
But I know there's an Emperor as a villain in 2.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Who knows?
But the thing is with Zand is that he is the boss of the Crystal Tower in Final Fantasy III, and he is also the boss of Circus Tower, which is allegedly the top of the Crystal Tower in Final Fantasy XIV. And they've gone so far as to painstakingly render him in the original Amano artwork for the character.
What?
Yeah. So basically, like, you know how Yoshitaka Amano was actually doing the artwork for the Final Fantasy games up until, you know, like, part 6?
Yeah, he still does the logo designs.
Yes. Zand was actually, there was an artwork of Zand that actually was, you know, was used to create, you know, the pixelized character. You know, like, he actually created a painting and stuff, and then he, you know, went through the pain of actually transforming him into a small pixelized character. But what they did for Final Fantasy XIV was they took that drawing and they turned him into a fully polygonized version of that Amano artwork.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so he's huge. He's pretty fucking gigantic. He is not a joke. He has been beaten, in case, you know, people are wondering about that. And, basically, actually, like, I read something really interesting about the Crystal Tower. If you'd indulge me, there's a little anecdote. Okay, so So in one of the sections of the Crystal Tower in Final Fantasy III, there was, you know, like, there's different sections of the Crystal Tower, right? You remember this, right?
It's been a long time since I played it.
Okay. So basically there are different sections of the Crystal Tower.
Okay.
And what's really fascinating about it is that, you know, there's different bosses, you know, for each area. One of the bosses is Titan. So when they'd actually decided to bring over the Crystal Tower from Final Fantasy III to Final Fantasy XIV, they naturally encountered some issues. First of all, being that Titan is actually one of the bosses. And as you know, Titan is actually a primal in Final Fantasy XIV already.
Oh, yeah.
So, the last boss of the Labyrinth of Ancients, which is the equivalent of Final Fantasy III, is called the Ancients Maze. Okay. Was Titan. So they changed his name to Acheron. Okay. So they said, all right, this is fucking awesome. That's great. Let's go with this and let's release this. And so Crystal Tower Labyrinth of Ancients was formed. So fast forward to the patch this week. They wanted to release another expansion for Crystal Tower, as you may imagine, called Circus Tower, which is another part of the Crystal Tower.
Gotcha.
However, in that portion of the game, you know, in Final Fantasy III, there is actually a character that is named Acheron. So, they can't use the name of Acheron for Circus Tower, because they had already named the boss of the Labyrinth of the Ancients as Acheron.
That's pretty funny.
So they had to rename the old Acheron from the Labyrinth of Ancients to something else, and so they now named the real Acheron in Circus Tower Acheron. And this is actually in the patch notes. It's hilarious.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the developers were like, oh, shit. We totally forgot. Yeah, we done fucked up. So,
we fucked up.
So that was totally hilarious. I was like, wow, that's funny as shit.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about that. I gotta talk about this for a second. This game, the more you tell me, it just seems like it's Final Fantasy references all over the fucking place, which is not a bad thing.
But it's like it's a different story though. Like it has its own storyline. It just incorporates the Final Fantasy everything into it. You know, like, you know, every single facet that was good about it. Like, you know, like there's Magitek armor. There's Materia. I mean, I don't need to kind of sell you on this because obviously, you know, like it would be overkill. But there is. There is mention of the Cloud of Darkness in Final Fantasy XIV. I'll tell you that.
Okay, now I remember. Zand was, he was the pawn of the Cloud of Darkness.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, because I did see some spoilers at the end of Circus Tower. I think I did see the Cloud of Darkness devour some people. I mean, I'm not exactly sure if it is, because I think it was in Japanese, so I couldn't really read it, which is great, because that means I just have to play it. But, so I think that's... I mean, of course, what they did was they actually re-engineered a storyline of the Crystal Tower, so it actually belongs in Final Fantasy XIV, which I think is great, right? I mean...
Yeah.
If they're gonna... they're gonna do that for Gold Saucer, I would much rather have them incorporate that into Final Fantasy XIV story and make it feel natural, which it does. But in any case, so there's that.
Any word on the Gold Saucer release?
They're being very mum about it. They're being very, very quiet about it.
Sounds like they're making a big deal out of it.
Well, I mean, I predict that it's probably going to not be part of any of the future patches. I'm predicting it's probably going to be a part of the next expansion.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I feel like with what they're hinting at, it's going to be a whole new content with like just as much content as the original, which means it'll require a higher level cap.
I gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So, well, real quick, I gotta ask, do people still play Final Fantasy XI?
Yes.
It still has a loyal base.
They still update it, you know? Okay. I'm not willing to go back there and actually try it out. But it does have a loyal fan base still. The thing is, though, for me, that just... I have just bad memories of that game in general. And okay. I don't see myself... even especially with this game out, I don't see, like, going back to Final Fantasy XI as actually a good idea. Especially since you were forced to pay for every single character that you own in that game.
Okay, fuck that game.
Yeah, so, it's an additional dollar for, like, another character. And I'm like, no. I don't want it.
No.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't... It was their idea. So, I don't know. But, yeah, so... So, yeah, so that's just one of the things that I've been kind of dabbling in that game. Another thing that's interesting, and I'm not going to kind of dwell on it, is the hunts. And the hunts, I think I told you about this. They took the hunts from Final Fantasy XII, and they basically made it into a full feature of Final Fantasy XIV.
And, yeah, you told me about that. You could go to bulletin boards and shit like that.
But there are S-rank monsters, S and A-rank monsters, that you can only find by talking to scholars that are kind of scattered throughout the world now, who give you clues as riddles in order to find these characters. These monsters, yeah.
Okay.
So it's now like Monster Hunter, basically, to a lesser degree.
Now these S-rank monsters, are they like...
These are
weapon?
These are... Well, I cannot say anything about the weapons. I will just get that out of the way, Anthony, for your sake.
Okay.
I cannot talk about any of the quote-unquote weapons.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, it's a good thing that you weren't actually part of the stream, like, last week, because that was, yeah, then that would have been a huge spoiler for you.
I was kind of part of it for a little bit. I saw Titan, which was cool, and Ifrit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those are fine. Those are, like, in the promotional materials. But the storyline stuff is pretty hardcore, and I'm kind of glad that you're not able to see those. So,
well,
yeah.
September, here I come.
Oh, God. So, you know, September is going to be a long way. Because, I mean, I'm pretty excited that you're actually going to try this game out, you know?
Well, two reasons. One, you do not have a passion for MMOs like I do. Usually.
You mean... You don't have a passion for MMOs like
I don't. I don't, but you don't either, to a degree. You're very... Like, you'll play them and get bored with them.
Yeah.
But this is the first one in all the 5 years, 6 years that I've known you, that you've stuck with. I mean, I remember even a point that you returned to World of Warcraft for a bit.
Yeah, just for a little bit, and I'm like, ah, this is crap.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that, so... And I can't believe people still play that piece of shit, so.
Well, you know, like, people like certain aspects of it, and I think they like the storyline, but I'm like, these characters are figureheads to me. They're not that interesting. Like, the characters in Final Fantasy have attitude, they actually can fuck up, there are... You know, and I think that's why I praise the storyline of 14 so much, is because it has that really nice blend of comedy and really good exposition and storyline that is missing from... Let's face it, that was missing from Final Fantasy games for quite a while.
Mm.
You know? I mean, I felt like, you know, 13 had none of it. Like, I felt like 13 was kind of like... It's almost like the Michael Bay of, you know, Final Fantasies.
I disagree.
I'm sure you disagree.
I disagree. Look, I think the characters are 20 times better than they were in 12. But that's just me. We won't go into the argument. If you want to hear that argument, go listen to the very first episode of Game Horizon, which is still on the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to rehash it, okay? But I'm just saying. But I'm not going to say it's better than 14 because I haven't played 14.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. Final Fantasy 13, again, I like it a lot, but it's not my favorite. It's not my favorite Final Fantasy by any means.
Yeah.
So again, you know, my top two are probably 6 and, like I recently announced, 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are fair choices.
I think those are pretty good choices. I'm still partial to 6, although I think it's about damn time I replayed it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The iPhone re-release isn't bad, as a lot of people make it out to be.
I'm still quite hesitant for it. I could play it on my Vita. I have part 6 bought, so might as well do that. Even though a lot of people like complain about the loading times and stuff, I'd much rather play it that way.
That part's not that bad.
It's the loading times that kill people.
Even that, I think, with, you know, on the Vitas, you could set it the load time to be faster.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really that much of a problem.
Yeah.
I think they're only a problem if you actually play it on a PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
So.
Kind of, you know, because we have to close this, unfortunately. I mean, this has been kind of like a long episode. not in a bad way, but like it's really interesting because we usually talk about a lot of things like on our freeform episodes, which this is one of them. But for some reason, like this one is just like we focused like mainly on four things, which is Final Fantasy 14 again, Rogue Legacy, and Wayward Sword. So this is interesting to me.
I didn't even get to talk about Tales of the Abyss because holy fuck, that story's. Let me say something real quick. Can I?
Yeah, real quick. Of course.
It is building up to be one of the best stories in that series.
Jesus.
It really is.
Exaggeration.
I don't know. I really don't know because it's just. It just is, and I don't know. You know what's fascinating about that series is each game, I'll be honest, they do have a similar look, but somehow the stories manage to be very, very different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. Like, Tales of the Abyss, you know, you're having, let's say this, you're having a Final Fantasy VII Cloud clone moment at this point in that game.
Oh, geez.
But let's put it this way, that, let's say if, you know, as you know, in Final Fantasy VII, the Cloud clone moment was a lie.
Yeah.
Let's say, for the sake of this game, it's the truth.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
In a way.
Okay.
I can kind of see that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, let's say that Cloud, if that Cloud clone moment was real in Final Fantasy VII.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you play Final Fantasy VII again, you know what I'm talking about, because that's a pretty pivotal moment in that game.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So
sounds good. All right. Well, that about does it for this episode, guys. Be sure to tune on. Yeah. Well, wow. I can't talk tonight. Tune in next week for another episode. You can subscribe to us at GamerHorizon.com. Our email address is sociallinkpodcast@GamerHorizon.com. Send us some emails, questions, and whatnot. I hope you guys like our freeform episodes. I think it's actually a pretty cool thing to be able to talk about some of the games we're passionate about. And, you know, I think that the new direction for our site is pretty interesting in that we're just talking about the games that we're passionate about. And, you know, instead of kind of forcing ourselves to talk about the newer games, which, you know, people might be interested in, but I feel like as gamers, I think there's a reality to talking about the games that we're interested in. You know what I mean?
Indeed. I agree.
Yeah. And, of course, if you have any sort of, you know, like, time in the near future, you can check out my stream at twitch.tv/backlogbattle_Alex. That is twitch.tv/backlogbattle_Alex. You can follow us on Twitter, which we actually tweet every single link to our streams when we're live, so you won't miss it. That is twitter.com/GamerHorizon. And, of course, our Facebook account, which is facebook.com/GamerHorizon. We post all our live stream information there. You know, if we go live, we post links there and stuff. And that is the absolute best way to kind of find us. And you want to plug some stuff, Anthony, before you go?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I have a major announcement concerning my YouTube channel.
Okay.
This is something I've talked to you about. I have been totally confused about what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have decided to completely reboot my channel. Now, I'm not closing the channel and starting a new one, which would be stupid, you know?
Yeah.
Because I have an established base there.
Yes.
And an established base, and it would hurt our base too, because some of our base comes from my base, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is it's going to be a completely reboot of the style of videos that I made.
Mm-hmm.
So the blog style will kind of be there, but you can't really get away with blog videos anymore.
Right.
So I'll give more information as plans start to flesh out. What this will involve is new equipment, though.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I don't know. So relaunch and the tentative plan is at least a weekly show.
Mm-hmm.
At least weekly. I will try to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. So
okay.
And then of course, you know, you could go watch my old videos at youtube.com/magus x1.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I got another podcast that I do, and episode 2 of that should be out tonight. And it's called Lit Off the Long Box. That's with my 3 best friends on outside of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And we do, and you've listened to it. And episode 2 will be out tonight.
Okay.
So it'll be about comics and pop culture.
Sweet.
So there you go.
Awesome. So, all right, guys. Well, we're going to have to record another episode after this. And, you know, I'm sorry. Again, I do apologize if you guys, like, you know, are like, no, another episode that we can't hear for another week. But rest assured, next week's episode is going to be even more awesome, because I think we're going to be talking about, like, some of the games that are coming in the second half of 2014, right?
Yes, sir. Lots of good stuff coming out this year.
Surprisingly. So if you guys are looking forward to that, be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Backlog Barbecue as well. I mean, that's an awesome podcast with me, Ari, and Ted.
But I'm subscribed to it.
You're subscribed to it, and specifically to the Social Link podcast from me and Anthony. So until next week, we'll see you guys later.